So you found who they were?
Most of them had Circle accounts, so I could just face wreck them. I mean, it took about 7 minutes. There were a few I had to use the Fed's database for. We don't have total access yet, but we can see DMV photos. That's most of the adults in the country.
And did you contact them?
Not yet.
But you know where they're all from?
Yeah. Once I knew their names, I could find all their addresses. Some had moved a few times, but I could cross-reference with the years I might have been with them.
I actually did this whole timeline of when I might have been at each place.
Most of them were in Kentucky, a few in Missouri, one was in Tennessee.
So that's it?
Well, I don't know. A couple are dead, so I don't know. I might just drive by some of these houses just to fill in some gaps. I don't know.
Oh, he said, turning over, brightening. I did have a couple revelations. I mean, most of the stuff was standard memories of these people, but there was one family who had an older girl. She was about 15 when I was 12. I didn't remember much, but I know she was my first serious sexual fantasy.
Those words, sexual fantasy, had an immediate effect on May. In the past, whenever they'd been uttered with or by any man, it led to the discussion of fantasies and some degree of enacting one or another fantasy, which she and Francis did, even if briefly. His fantasy was to leave the room and knock on the door, pretending to be a lost teenager knocking on the door of a beautiful suburban house. Her job was to be a lonely housewife and invite him in, scantily clad and desperate for company. And so he knocked, and she greeted him at the door, and he told her he was lost, and she told him he should get out of those old clothes, that he could put on some of her husband's. Francis liked that so much that things accelerated quickly, and in seconds he was undressed and she was on top of him. He lay beneath her for a minute or two, letting May rise and fall, looking up at her with the wonderment of a boy at the zoo. Then his eyes closed, and he went into paroxysms, emitting a brief squeal before grunting his arrival. Now, as Francis brushed his teeth, May, exhausted and feeling not love but something close to contentment, arranged herself under the thick comforter and faced the wall. The clock said 3:11. Francis emerged from the bathroom.
I have a second fantasy,
he said, pulling the blanket over him and bringing his face close to May's neck.
I'm inches from sleep, she muttered.
No, nothing strenuous, no activity required. This is just a verbal thing.
Okay.
I want you to rate me, he said.
What?
Just a rating, like you do at CE.
Like from 1 to 100?
Exactly.
Rate what? Your performance?
Yes.
Come on, I don't want to do that. It's just for fun. Francis, please, I don't want to. It takes the enjoyment out of it for me.
Francis sat up with a loud sigh.
Well, not knowing takes the enjoyment out of it for me.
Not knowing what?
How I did.
How you did? You did fine.
Francis made a loud sound of disgust. She turned over.
What's the matter?
Fine? He said. I'm fine?
Oh, God. You're great. You're perfect. When I say fine, I just mean that you couldn't do better.
Okay, he said, moving closer to her. Then why didn't you say that before?
I thought I did.
You think fine is the same as perfect and couldn't do better?
No, I know it's not. I'm just tired. I should have been more precise.
A self-satisfied smile overtook Francis's face.
You know, you just proved my point.
What point?
We just argued about all this, about the words you used and what they meant. We didn't understand their meaning the same way, and we went around and around about it. But if you had just used a number, I would have understood right away.
He kissed her shoulder.
Okay, I get it,
she said, and closed her eyes.
Well,
he said. She opened her eyes to Francis's pleading mouth.
Well, what?
You're still not going to give me a number?
You really want a number?
May? Of course I do.
Okay, 100.
She turned to the wall again.
That's the number? It is. You get a perfect 100.
May felt like she could hear him, grinning.
Thank you, he said, and kissed the back of her head. Night.
The room was grand, on the top floor of the Victorian era, with its epic views, its glass ceiling. May entered and was greeted by most of the gang of 40, the group of innovators who routinely assessed and greenlighted new Circle ventures.
Hello, May,
said a voice, and she found its source, Eamon Bailey, arriving and taking his place at the other end of the long room. Wearing a zippered sweatshirt, his sleeves rolled above his elbows, he entered theatrically and waved to her, and, she knew, to all those who might be watching. She expected the audience to be large, given she and the Circle had been zinging about it for days. She checked her bracelet, and the current viewership was 1,982,992. Incredible, she thought, and it would climb. She sat in the middle of the table, better to grant the viewers access not just to Bailey, but to most of the gang, their comments, and reactions. After she'd sat, and after it was too late to move, May realized she didn't know where Annie was. She scanned the 40 faces in front of her on the table's opposite side and didn't see her. She craned her neck around, careful to keep the camera trained on Bailey, and finally caught sight of Annie by the door behind two rows of circlers, those standing by the door in case they needed to leave unnoticed. May knew Annie had seen her, but she made no acknowledgement.
Okay, Bailey said, smiling broadly at the room. I think we should just dig in, given we're all present.
And here his eyes stopped ever so briefly on May and the camera around her neck. It was important, May had been told, that the entire event seemed natural and that it appeared that May and the audience were being invited into a very regular sort of event.
Hi, gang, Bailey said. Pun intended.
The 40 men and women smiled.
Okay, a few months ago we all met Olivia Santos, a very courageous and visionary legislator who is bringing transparency to a new, and I dare say, ultimate level. And you might have seen that as of today, over 20,000 other leaders and legislators around the world have followed her lead and have taken the pledge to make their lives as public servants completely transparent. We've been very encouraged by this.
May checked the view on her wrist. Her camera was trained on Bailey and the screen behind him. Comments were already coming in, thanking her and the Circle for this kind of access. One watcher compared it to watching the Manhattan Project. Another mentioned Edison's Menlo Park lab, circa 1879. Bailey continued.
Now, this new era of transparency dovetails with some other ideas I have about democracy and the role that technology can play in making it complete. And I use the word complete on purpose, because our work toward transparency might actually achieve a fully accountable government. As you've seen, the governor of Arizona has had her entire staff go transparent, which is the next step. In a few cases, even with a clear elected official, we've seen some corruption behind the scenes. The transparent elected have been used as figureheads, shielding the back room from view. But that will change soon, I believe. The officials and their entire offices with nothing to hide will go transparent within the year, at least in this country. And Tom and I have seen to it that they get a steep discount on the necessary hardware and server capacity to make it happen.
The 40 clapped heartily.
But that's only half the battle. That's the elected half of things. But what about the other half? Our half as citizens? The half where we're all supposed to participate?
Behind Bailey, a picture of an empty polling place appeared in a desolate high school gym somewhere. It dissolved into an array of numbers.
Here are the numbers of participants in the last elections. As you can see, at the national level, we're at around 58% of those eligible to vote. Incredible, isn't it? And then you go down the line to state and local elections, and the percentages drop off a cliff. 32% for state elections, 22% for counties, 17% for most small town elections. How illogical is that? That the closer government is to home, the less we care about it. It's absurd, don't you think?
May checked her watchers. There were over 2 million. She was adding about 1,000 viewers a second.
Okay, Bailey continued. So we know there are a bunch of ways that technology, much of it originating here, has helped make it easier to vote. We're building on a history of trying to increase access and ease. Back in my day, there was the Motor Voter Bill. That helped. Then some states allowed you to register or update your registration online. Fine. But how did it impact voter turnout? Not enough. But here's where it gets interesting. Here's how many people voted in the last national election. The screen behind him read 140 million. Here's how many were eligible to vote. The screen read 244 million. Meanwhile, there's us. Here's how many Americans are registered with the circle. The screen read 241 million. That's some startling math, right? 100 million more people are registered with us than voted for the president. What does that tell you?
We're awesome!
An older man with a gray ponytail and a frayed t-shirt yelled from the second row. Laughter opened up the room.
Well, sure, Bailey said. But besides that,
it tells you that the circle has a knack for getting people to participate. And there are a lot of people in Washington who agree. There are people in D.C. who see us as the solution to making this a fully participatory democracy. Behind Bailey, the familiar image of Uncle Sam pointing appeared. Then another image of Bailey wearing the same outfit in the same pose appeared next to Uncle Sam. The room guffawed. So now we get to the meat of today's session. And that is, what if your circle profile automatically registered you to vote? Bailey swept his eyes across the room, hesitating again at May and her watchers. She checked her wrist. Goosebumps, one viewer wrote. With True You, to set up a profile, you have to be a real person with a real address, complete personal info, a real Social Security number, a real and verifiable date of birth. In other words, all the information the government traditionally wants when you register to vote. In fact, as you all know, we have far more information. So why wouldn't this be enough information to allow you to register? Or better yet, why wouldn't the government, our government, or any government, just consider you registered once you set up a True You profile? The 40 heads in the room nodded, some out of acknowledgement of a sensible idea, some clearly having thought of this before, that it was a notion long discussed. May checked her bracelet. The viewer numbers were climbing quicker, 10,000 a second, and were now over 2,400,000. She had 1,248 messages. Most had come through in the last 90 seconds. Bailey glanced down at his own tablet, no doubt seeing the same numbers she was seeing. Smiling, he continued. There's no reason. And a lot of legislators agree with me. Congresswoman Santos does, for one, and I have verbal commitments from 181 other members of Congress and 32 senators. They've all agreed to push legislation to make your True You profile your automatic path to registration. Not bad, right? There was a brief round of applause. Now think, Bailey said, his voice a whisper of hope and wonder. Think if we can get closer to full participation in all elections. There would be no more grumbling from the sidelines from people who had neglected to participate. There would be no more candidates who had been elected by a fringe, wedge group. As we know here at the Circle, with full participation comes full knowledge. We know what circlers want because we ask, and because they know their answers are necessary to get a full and accurate picture of the desires of the whole Circle community. So, if we observe the same model nationally, electorally, then we can get very close, I think, to 100% participation, 100% democracy. Applause rippled through the room. Bailey smiled broadly, and Stenton stood. It was, for him at least, apparently the end of the presentation. But an idea had been forming within May's mind, and she raised her hand tentatively. "Yes, May?" Bailey said, his face still locked into a broad grin of triumph. "Well, I wonder if we couldn't take this one step further. I mean, well, actually, I don't think it..." No, go on, May. You started well. I like the words, one step further. That's how this company was built." May looked around the room, the faces a mix of encouraging and concerned. Then she alighted on Annie's face
and because it was stern and dissatisfied and seemed to be expecting, or wanting, May to fail, to embarrass herself, May gathered herself, took a breath, and forged ahead. Okay, well, you were saying we could get close to 100% participation, and I wonder why we couldn't just work backwards from that goal, using all the steps you outlined, all the tools we already have. May looked around the room, ready to quit at the first pair of skeptical eyes, but she saw only curiosity, the slow collective nodding of a group practiced in preemptive validation.
Go on, Bailey said.
I'm just going to connect some dots, May said. Well, first of all, we all agree that we'd like 100% participation and that everyone would agree that 100% participation is the ideal.
Yes, Bailey said. It's certainly the idealist's ideal.
And we currently have 83% of the voting age Americans registered on the circle?
Yes.
And it seems that we're on our way to voters being able to register and maybe even to actually vote through the circle.
Bailey's head was bobbing side to side, some indication of mild doubt, but he was smiling, his eyes encouraging.
A small leap, but okay, go on.
So why not require every voting age citizen to have a circle account?
There was some shuffling in the room, some intake of breath, mostly from the older circlers.
Let her finish, someone, a new voice, said.
May looked around to find Stenton near the door. His arms were crossed, his eyes staring at the floor. He looked briefly up to May and nodded brusquely. She regained her direction.
Okay, I know the initial reaction will be resistance. I mean, how can we require anyone to use our services? But we have to remember that there are all kinds of things that are mandatory for citizens of this country, and these things are mandatory in most industrialized countries. Do you have to send your kids to school? Yes, that's mandatory. It's a law. Kids have to go to school, or you have to arrange some kind of homeschooling, but it's mandatory. It's also mandatory that you register for the draft, right? That you get rid of your garbage in an acceptable way. You can't drop it on the street. You have to have a license if you want to drive, and when you do, you have to wear a seatbelt.
Stenton joined in again.
We require people to pay taxes and to pay into Social Security, to serve on juries.
Right, May said. And to pee indoors, not on the streets. I mean, we have 10,000 laws. We require so many legitimate things of citizens of the United States. So why can't we require them to vote? They do in dozens of countries.
It's been proposed here,
one of the older circlers said.
Not by us, Stenton countered.
And that's my point, May said, nodding to Stenton. The technology has never been there before. I mean, at any other moment in history, it would have been prohibitively expensive to track down everyone and register them to vote, and then to make sure they actually did. You'd have to go door to door, drive people to polls, all these unfeasible things. Even in the countries where it's mandatory, it's not really enforced. But now it's within reach. I mean, you cross-reference any voting rolls with the names in our TrueU database, and you'd find half the missing voters right there and then. You register them automatically, and then when election day comes around, you make sure they vote.
How do we do that?
A female voice said. May realized it was Annie's. It wasn't a direct challenge, but the tone wasn't friendly either.
Oh, geez, Bailey said. 100 ways. That's an easy part. You remind them 10 times that day. Maybe their accounts don't work that day till they vote. That's what I'd favor anyway. Hello, Annie, it could say. Take 5 minutes to vote. Whatever it is, we do that for our own surveys. You know that, Annie.
And when he said her name, he shaded it with disappointment and warning, discouraging her from opening her mouth again. He brightened and turned back to May.
And the stragglers?
He asked. May smiled at him. She had an answer. She looked at her bracelet. There were now 7,202,821 people watching. When had that happened?
Well, everyone has to pay taxes, right? How many people do it online now? Last year, maybe 80%. What if we all stopped duplicating services and made it all part of one unified system? You use your Circle account to pay taxes, to register to vote, to pay your parking tickets, to do anything. I mean, we would save each user hundreds of hours of inconvenience, and collectively, The country would save billions.
Hundreds of billions.